I'm Beth Kuhl, your executive career coach and host of Breakthroughs, Smart Strategies for Business and Career Growth. Today, we're going to focus on how you can make virtual meetings matter. We're going to get into how to turn virtual meetings from boring status updates to remarkable conversations. I have Paul Axtell, an authority on this topic, here to share tips he uses with actual clients. In his new book, Make Virtual Meetings Matter, author and consultant Paul Axtell shares actionable tips and advice on how to run effective and productive virtual meetings. Paul has a degree in engineering and an MBA and is a regular contributor to Harvard Business Review. For the past 15 years, he's provided consulting and personal effectiveness training to a wide variety of clients, from Fortune 500 companies and universities to nonprofit organizations and government agencies. A large focus of his work is how to run effective and productive meetings to turn them from dreaded calendar items into vital, productive sessions with measurable results. Welcome, Paul. I'm really glad to have you on my show.
Well, I'm honored to be here, and I love the idea of breakthrough, you know, thinking differently and producing both different thinking and different levels of results. So if that's the game we're playing, I'm all in.
What's the ideal number of participants for virtual meetings to be effective?
Well, Beth, actually, it's the same as in-person meetings. 8 is the tipping point at which conversation starts to erode. And so if you think about above 8, that means the person who's managing the meeting, leading the meeting, needs more skill. If you look at the best conversation occurs in groups of 4 because there's enough intimacy, enough closeness, there's enough time. You would never think about pulling out a device or multitasking in a small group. So as the group size goes up, those things that interfere with great conversation are more likely to occur. But 8 is pretty much the tipping point at which you need to be much more deliberate about managing the conversation. So clearly, if there's 2 of us, we don't need to think about facilitation. If we had 20, it would require a high degree of facilitation skill. So 8's the magic number.
How can you handle virtual meeting fatigue? And what's the best way to keep people engaged?
Well, let me answer the second question better. The way to keep people engaged is have the right agenda. Only schedule meetings for topics that need to be discussed. Only have the people there who need to be there to do the work. So the agenda becomes pretty important. In terms of fatigue, I think you just go back and rely on how you and I work best in any setting. And it's basically 40 minutes on and 20 minutes off. So 40 minutes for a topic in a meeting, and then let's stand up and walk, take a break, chat with each other, come back and do another 40 minutes. And that's pretty much how your mind is wired. It likes to go all in, be intense, and then it needs to walk outside, have a quick chat, do something different. So if we could somehow build in 40-20, that idea, I think Zoom fatigue would be less.
Okay, so we'll keep in mind the 40-20 ratio to avoid Zoom fatigue. Paul, could you share with us an example from your consulting business of a company that you worked with that really was struggling with meetings and they weren't working? People were distracted, their agenda was unclear, there was no possibility for innovation in that environment. And then when you came in with these strategies that you're sharing with us today, that they had a dramatic turnaround?
Yes. Meetings is like a lot of areas of our life, Beth. If we become very cognizant of how we're interacting with something. So if we raise our level of awareness, particularly for the key variables, things improve pretty fast. Go back to this idea of 8. I've got a client who has 60 people who meet for 3 hours once a month. But if you were to walk into that room, it would be as though it would feel like there's 8-10 people there. They have very clear agendas that go out ahead of time. Everybody prepares. Nobody brings other devices. There are no side conversations. Whenever somebody speaks, it's on target and the whole room is listening and paying attention to them. So you can get there. It just requires pretty much two things. The person calling the meeting must have a perspective called, there's a lot of time and talent in this room, and I'm going to respect it, which means I'm going to have the right agenda. I'm going to prepare, can take on and have very effective meetings pretty quickly if they choose to do so. And maybe one of the downsides of working from home is that we've settled for less. We're less effective, less connected, less intentional. So maybe it's an opportunity for us to actually improve and practice those competencies and capacities that will then pay off when we get back. If you just think about multitasking, multitasking doesn't work in life. And yet it's easier to do that at home than it is face to face with other people in a meeting. So I think that the whole idea about meetings getting better starts with people at the top saying this is a competitive advantage and we want that competitive advantage. I think the other thing, Beth, is that most people don't own the meetings they walk into unless they call them. So you have people walking into meetings with a perspective. It could be expressed in a couple of ways. This is not my meeting. I don't have to speak if I don't feel like it. I don't actually have to prepare ahead of time. I can just kind of go there and I'll see if I want to say something or not. Well, now imagine if everybody said, nope, even though I didn't call the meeting, I'm responsible for this meeting turning out. Meetings would get better in a second if everybody chose to own every meeting that they participated in. I hope that makes sense.
It does, but is it realistic to expect that people who have their, you know, distinctive roles and not always is it targeted towards their job description or what their mandate is? Is it appropriate to speak up? I'm thinking of, you know, new hires or people who, you know, might have an idea. Sometimes there's a delicate balance of when it's appropriate to speak up and when to hold back.
Well, good point. You are not yet seen being highly competent, viewed with respect, colleagues, and you have less freedom to speak up and challenge, for sure. However, everybody has a right to ask for what they need to be effective in any conversation. So if you need the agenda ahead of time so you can prepare, ask for that. If you need clarity about how long we're going to spend on the topic and where the person wants to get to at the end of the 40 minutes and what they're looking for from the group, you have a right to ask for that. So yes, one should be thoughtful. Where is my status in this group? You also, because you were invited, permission and a right to ask for what you need to be effective in that conversation.
That makes a lot of sense. And it sounds like people just have to be respectful of what we're trying to accomplish in a particular meeting. And so if we do add something, that we make sure that it's going to be on point and not distracting. Do you find that typically when you prepare people with these tips time, that they have made a shift? Is that what you were saying initially with that 60 people and it felt like there were 8 people? Is that because they did have a clear agenda ahead of time and they were respectful of, you know, with not bringing their technology with them and et cetera?
Yes. Like effective groups need agreements for how they're going to interact. They set up agreements and leading the meeting permission they need. So if we take virtual meetings, it takes more time to have a virtual conversation than we're in the same room. And think about concerned about people, how they're going to participate, you simply ask for that. And I guess ask these days would for people to set aside actions, set aside devices that are not necessary for the meeting. But the conversation suffers if people are checking their devices. We take it personally if people in the room, particularly the higher level people in the room, are having a side conversation, not paying attention.
It's easy for people who are extroverts who speak up. That's what I've noticed. But what about the introverts that might have great ideas? It's a little more difficult when it's, you know, like I think you mentioned, you know, that a leader of the meeting could ask people, but sometimes they also feel that they're being put on the spot.
Yeah. Well, I say you call on people gently. I also have a very big view of people. I think people can handle themselves. Almost always when you call on somebody, they will have something they can add to the conversation. Well, what they're thinking has already been said. You know, I get that question a lot from people who would like to have more impact when they speak. It's surprising how many people don't speak. When they speak, they feel like the group doesn't hear what they're saying or doesn't work with what they're saying. So this was what I would tell those folks. Number one, if you're not going to speak in a meeting, do not go. Got too many people in meetings anyway. If you are not going to speak, do not go. The thing is, prepare. Get the agenda ahead of time, which sometimes is a problem. Topic, what ideas you've got, what concerns you've got, what questions you've got, what points you would like to be made, so that you already know that going in. I like the whole idea about quiet. I mean, quiet's pretty good. Quiet and reflective. It's actually a strength. If you think about it, people who are in the conversation a lot, so Beth, the largest complaint across the board is some people speak more often than they should and longer than they should, and nobody does anything about them. You have are quickly into the conversation, then you have the ones who are quiet, reflective, and never get in. You know, quiet people actually have more impact when they speak because they don't speak as often. If you speak all the time, there's diminishing returns in the quality of the conversation you're adding to speak. The other thing about a way to have impact in meetings is typically we're thinking automatically about what content can I add to the topic. Quiet, reflective people, they can also add comments about the process. Like, it looks like we've changed the conversation, or I'm noticing a couple of people who I think are affected by this, and I'd like to get them into the conversation. Or I know you're about ready to leave this conversation, but I want to make sure that there's nothing anybody's got that still needs to be said. So the quiet person is most likely to be far enough back from the conversation that they can make really insightful comments and help direct the conversational process. It's a gift to be quiet and reflective, but not if you don't say anything.
Absolutely. We could all take note of Susan Cain's book, Quiet.
Yes.
And her TED talk, the introverts. And it's true that oftentimes it's the introverts who have the best ideas. So we have to make space for them. I've been in a number of meetings where almost like a power struggle. It's not as democratic as you're describing. And it's very intimidating. There's certain people who are comfortable speaking up. And I don't know, you mentioned that what you could do with these ineffective meeting behaviors of leaders, of the ones who are actually the group together. It's not so simple to say everyone can talk. Come to that meeting wanting to talk, but they don't want you to talk.
Yeah, well, I don't know that they don't want you to talk. I think they've just somehow got raised where they have kind of a dominating style. I think you're absolutely right. Go back to the very first point you make. If you don't have stature in that group, it's unlikely you'll be able to get in and make a point with a group that's got a pretty difficult dynamic to get into. And if the leader's not looking for this meeting to have a high level, high quality, high participative level of conversation, you're not going to get there either. Well, you're absolutely right. If the perspective, the context, or how this is being led or how it's being approached is not empowering, no tips or techniques will bail you out.
Well, with that being said, I think it's clear that your book, How to Make Virtual Meetings Matter, is an important, useful, timely guide for anyone seeking to lead an effective meeting. To summarize some of your key points from this episode, you show how thoughtful, respectful, and focused conversation is the key to creating an effective meeting. The strategies you suggest, such as setting a clear agenda ahead of time, giving people all the information they might need in order to prepare, keeping the meeting size small, no larger than 8 people, setting clear guidelines to avoid distractions such as no eating, no technology, no interrupting. Don't give people the allowance to talk too long about irrelevant points. Arriving late or leaving early is unacceptable, and making that all clear so everyone knows what's expected of them, just the basic guidelines. And then for the leader to be encouraging to everyone in the meeting, for each person to participate, especially those who might be reluctant but have great ideas. For each conversation topic, spend some time designing an agenda and its desired outcome. Start by scheduling the amount of time the group will require if people stay on track and work effectively. And again, just be clear up front about what you want from the group. You know, before the meeting, give the participants agenda and whatever information they need to be ready to participate. When leadership provides critical information prior to the meeting, so people know what's expected of them, they'll be much better able to prepare themselves to make meaningful contributions to the conversation. The best part, and I know every organization wants this, is when you apply the strategies to these virtual meetings, they can become one of your best tools for improving employee engagement and retention. Paul, I'm so glad you came on to the show today, and thank you again for your wisdom and insights for how any leader of a meeting can turn a virtual meeting from a status, boring update to a remarkable conversation.
Very welcome. Let's have a few breakthroughs around meetings.
And if you'd like to purchase Paul's book, Make Virtual Meetings Matter, How to Turn Virtual Meetings from Status Updates to Remarkable Conversations, you can find it on Amazon, and I'll make sure to have a link to the book in my podcast notes. Thanks for listening.